This is Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
New Kids on the Block and Tommy James and Money Money. I was just thinking about those two tracks. They were probably about 30-odd years apart. Tommy James and the Shondells out in the 1960s. You'd have probably bought that on a 7-inch single. New Kids on the Block, you'd have probably got... You could have bought the CD album, or you would have bought a CD single. You could have probably bought an ordinary 7-inch vinyl track back then, but it wasn't quite so, because it was falling by the wayside, so to speak. But vinyl over the last few years is definitely making a bit of a comeback, and we've got to welcome our friends from AAA Records. It's Jonathan Bacon.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
Very well. It's funny you should say about New Kids on the Block, because we had a New Kids on the Block collector in last week who bought up all our New Kids on the Block vinyl.
You're joking.
We had about four or five things in, and she was desperate to... She'd got rid of her collection a few years ago and was desperate to recreate it, and we were able to help.
Were you shocked?
It's not the most shocking request we've had for what people want to listen to, but it's not a common one, it must be said.
Well, honestly, I don't know what to say to that.
You didn't know so I didn't know what you were going to play that. But yeah, it was out of the blue. Someone said, "Have you got any New Kids on the Block?" I think we might, at the back of the rack somewhere.
So it's 7-inch singles or albums?
It was mostly 12-inch singles, actually.
12-inch singles?
Yeah, we've got quite a big collection of those.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. So what was the strangest request ever then? Can you say?
Do you remember your first album you told me about once?
Ah.
Yeah. Someone came in looking for him.
Oh. Mm. Really?
Yeah.
Did you say there's the exit? The exit is here and here?
I said, sorry, sir, we don't have any.
No, why would you? Do you know what? I've got to admit, let's address this. We won't mention his name, but I had an album and it was... a brilliant album. He had so many fantastic tracks, and it was gobsmacking then later on in life, because some of these tracks were at least one was used in nightclubs all over the world. And I heard this particular track last week watching was it Happy Gilmore? The new film's come out. There was one in 1996, and there's a new one that's come out. And this particular track that I'm talking about was being played in the film by this particular person whose name we won't mention. And I thought, what do you do? Do you turn it off? Or do you... It's 30 seconds of a film. But it left me thinking, God, that's such a great track. What an absolute travesty that he turned out to be X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
I know this is a bit cryptic, but I wouldn't go into a shop and ask for it. So that surprises me more than the New Kids on the Block.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's move on to positive stuff. So, I mean, there you are with... I mean, whose idea was it to say, let's open up a vinyl shop?
Well, it was my partner, Andy, business partner, Andy Barding, who started a shop, must be about 5-6 years ago now, in Scarrett's Lane, which a lot of people will know and remember. And just it grew and grew. The stock grew and grew, and he ran out of space. I became a customer, and we talked, and we got friendly, and the idea came up of... basically when I was trying to find things in there, and it was very difficult, about going into partnership and finding bigger premises. So we hunted round, we found the shop we now have, which is just opposite in St. James Street, just opposite the Man in the Moon, the Weatherspoons pub, and moved in there last April, I think. So we've been going about a year and a half now, and there's definitely an appetite for vinyl out there.
Yeah, definitely.
And funny enough, I can't remember the lady who was in. Chloe, who was in just then. Apparently, she collects cassettes. We've got cassettes as well. We've got 8 tracks. We've got some reel-to-reels, not too many of them. But anything that is recorded in some form of medium will stock and provide.
Wow.
We did a lot of 78s as well. We've got a couple of collectors who come in. Some are only looking for stuff pre-1930, but still...
I'm amazed. I mean, I used to know this lovely lady down the road from us on Pan, Sylvia Viney, I think her name was. I don't know whether she's around now. She used to have all of Elvis Presley's back catalogue on 78.
Wow.
I would imagine that's worth quite a bit of money.
I suspect it is, yes.
Yeah. I would imagine the family have got it, or they've flogged it on and made some. But, yeah, no, that's. I mean, everyone's got something within their collection that's probably worth something. You know, a bit of money or, you know, just a real gem. A real gem.
Yeah, we buy in collections a lot of the time. We don't cherry pick. If someone wants to get rid of records, they're clearing out the loft, or sadly some people have relatives who've died and they just don't know what to do with the vinyl, we'll always do that. But we'll go through, and yes, you do find those little gems in there occasionally, and we'll always make sure that we pay fairly for that. So I bought in a collection a couple of weeks ago, and yeah, there was some nice 70s stuff, and then there was this one gem, as you say, popped up, a record from 1967 by a group called Kaleidoscope, Tangerine Dream, and we've sold it on very quickly because it's very desirable, but we made that person not quite four figures, but a significant sum of money.
Wow.
And it was just sitting, it had been sitting in a box for ages, and it's surprising what is collectible, because you get people coming in and say, I've got a Beatles record. That's good, isn't it? So it must be collectible. Yeah, but there were quite a few sold.
Yeah.
But there are collectible Beatles records. There are particular issues of tracks, of albums and singles that are valuable. Part of what I've been learning, since I've always been a collector of records, but it's learning to spot those things. And that's been a really interesting journey for the last year and a half, so that you can, you know, fairly value things, both to be fair to the customer who's selling them and the people who are buying them.
Right. I mean, honestly, I could sit here all day and talk about vinyl and stuff. I mean, I'm just, you know, there's a few things that's popped into my head thinking. So first things first, there was a song by XTC, Making Plans for Nigel.
Yep.
And it used to be a folded up sheet of Snakes and Ladders.
Yes, again, a collectible item. Because most of them just came in a bag with the couple watching TV on the front.
Yeah.
A lot of people have got that. But I think we've had one of those rare fold-out sleeves in the last 18 months. And, yep, it's got a price tag on it. I can't remember off the top of my head what it is. It's probably around £50.
Wow.
Just for a 7-inch single you probably bought for 79p from Woolworths back in the day.
Yeah, that's. I mean, obviously, when I used to buy records late 70s and all through the 80s and some of the 90s, you always wanted a picture sleeve. You didn't want the boring old, you know, just an ordinary black sleeve or a white sleeve with nothing on it. And I remember buying one. You might have heard me say this before, but there was an Elvis Costello track. The accidents will happen,
yeah.
And it had an inside out sleeve. So the outside of it was white, and the sleeve was on the inside. And I used to have that. I was gutted when I stupidly gave away or sold my music, all my records, and I used to have a load of coloured vinyls and lots of picture discs and lots of picture sleeves as well. And they were all in really, really good condition, because I used to, you know, be really kind of fussy about who touched them and so on. And now I think you idiot. You idiot for doing that. So look, calling the caftan. I think we've done this one before. If I was to do that to you, two fingers, you know what I mean?
Yes, except it was the other way round.
Oh, is it peace?
Yes.
Love and peace, man. Oh, yeah, it's at the top, yeah. But I'm holding it out the other way. So,
okay.
So something like that, how much would that go for?
Sometimes it depends on the artist, though. B.A. Robertson... he's not a particularly collectible artist. That's probably a £4 single, £3-4 single,
right?
Which is around average for reasonable condition stuff from late 70s, early 80s. So,
okay.
Not a particularly collectible item. The XTC are more, they're a more collectible group. They've got some very collectible albums. If you've got original XTC albums, they're £20, £30, £40 items. And some of them, there's, you know, circular sleeves and various inserts, fold-outs and so on. All those sort of things. It's really the sort of things that don't survive too well that are often the collectibles. You know, things that were fragile at the time, posters that were on thin paper, if they're still in good condition in the album, then that adds a premium to the value. But sometimes it's very random what is collectible. So it's a combination of, were there that many of them made? Is there something particularly striking about it, the design or the artwork? And it comes down a lot of the time to the artist as well. Bob Dylan, for example, great artist, lots of stuff out there, but very little that's high-value collectible. Maybe some of the 60s albums, original copies in mono, yes, they'll go for price, but pretty much anything else is a tenner.
Wow. Okay. Just one thing. We've got to go into a break.
Yeah.
You brought some stuff in. We're going to discuss that. But just something that's popped into my head. I'm a big Squeeze fan, as you know. There's two things that I think that might be worth a fair bit, that. First thing, there was a 5-inch single that they brought out.
That I don't recall. I don't actually know about that.
Oh, right.
Ah,
okay.
That's one I'm going to have to look up now.
Okay, so it's I remember the track in a minute, but there was something else that I got. It was a flexi disc that was attached to the Smash Hits.
Yes.
Back in about 1980. It was called Wrong Way.
It was green, wasn't it?
It was green, yeah.
I remember it, yeah. I had that copy. I've not seen one for years.
No.
Again, flexi discs, they can be... They were promotional items. Sometimes they're valuable, sometimes they're not. One thing I found recently, I didn't realise flexi discs go back to pre-war.
We
found some old 78 flexi discs on white vinyl from about 1930. You even find 78s on coloured vinyl very occasionally. The condition is appalling because they didn't learn to make coloured vinyl properly until the 80s. But you know, these things go back, and again, it just depends what it is. And what condition it is. Condition is so important as to what the value is.
Okay, there's something else that I've got as well that's that was Squeeze. It was a 10-inch mini LP, three tracks on either side, and it got the cover, but the cover is being squeezed in, so it's not a square shape. So you've got an album cover, and they've gone they've squeezed it in from either side. So that all of this is this is not cardboard anymore. So it's
again, I've not seen one. Not seen one. Maybe maybe that's the most valuable thing we hear of this year.
Yeah, but it's Squeeze. No one else likes Squeeze but me.
And me.
I'll sell it to you. We're going to take a quick break, come back with some local tunage in the shape of Double Take and Climb Every Mountain. And we're also going to be talking about local music. And obviously, do you have local music in the shops?
We have a local music section, Isle of Wight section, which includes, obviously, we've got Wet Leg, but we've got stuff going way back to the choir.
Played them this morning.
I heard it when I was on my way in. Yeah, we've got a big Isle of Wight section. So if there's anything you're looking for from bands, old or new, we've probably got it.
I can't wait for this ad break to finish.
The Mid Morning Show is proudly sponsored by PC Consultants.
That's the Double Take Girls, and that was their version of Climb Every Mountain. If you're a local artist, please get in touch, send us your tracks. We'd love to play them. Ian.mac@vectisradio.fm. We've got our friends in from AAA Records, Jonathan Bacon, and you've actually got a local music section, haven't you?
We certainly have, yes. And what we're also doing, perhaps more importantly, is upstairs in the shop, we're starting a museum. An archive which is about the history of Isle of Wight music, and it goes right up to Wet Leg, The Pill, but it goes right back to, for example, in the Victorian era. Sorry, there was a music hall artist called Annie Adams, came from the Isle of Wight, and it's just really interesting to find so much rich musical history on the island, and we're trying to celebrate that. Obviously, people think Isle of Wight music festivals, and yes, we've got a certain amount of that, but it's really interesting to look into those other things as well, and the music scene on the island back in the day, and who played here. You know, like Pink Floyd at the Royal York Hotel when it was the 69 Club. Eric Clapton played the Commodore Cinema when he was in the Yardbirds. All these things, we're wanting to find out and find out people's stories about them. But yeah, we're starting up a little museum to celebrate that, and we'll be formally opening August Bank Holiday. We've got Ray Fuke, who is supporting us, obviously organiser of the 68, 69, 70 festivals. He's given us some of his archive for the museum, and he's going to be there launching his reissued book about the 1970 festival. But as I say, that's just part of it. There's so much to celebrate on the island in its music.
Wow.
Both in the past and what's coming. There's some wonderful artists coming through. Probably my favourite is Paul Armfield, who a lot of people will know. We obviously got his records as well. There's that brilliant Between the Covers album he released earlier this year. But yeah, so I could talk about it for a long time.
Nice,
but,
excellent. I'd say the museum is going to be really awesome. I mean, I was around in the Going Out Club in '80s, and used to see Choir and things. And I know that was available on vinyl because my brother bought a copy of it. But you're going back even further, aren't you?
Oh well, yeah, we've got 78s that were made on the island. Oh, crumbs, I can't remember. But there's some really old stuff. There's stuff. The school choirs, but anything that comes from the Isle of Wight. Youth Concert Band, we've got their LP from, I think it was the 80s. But there's just so much if you start looking, and so many interesting stories.
It's got Radio Show written all over it, hasn't it?
I think it might have,
yeah. Oh, crikey. It'd be fabulous to bring what you've got there by way of audio and put it on the airwaves. How great would that
be?
Well,
I've got this. You asked me to bring a couple of things in. There was a record company on the island, Solent Records, which I'm sure some people remember. I found this. I was going to try and record it.
Is that John Waterman?
Yes. Yeah. Who's still around, I believe.
Good.
But there's a fantastic song, The Ferry to the Isle of Wight by Tony Marlowe, which got a, what's the date on it? 1976. I've got to get you to play this at some point, get a recording of it, record it onto something we can play on the radio, because everything it says, you could have been recorded last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's fascinating. But, then, you know, so there's stuff about the island as well.
So he was an islander then, Tony Marlowe?
I don't know. I haven't researched the history. It's Andy at the shop who's the real expert on the island history and the music, and a lot of that stuff is from his personal collection.
Right.
But, yeah, it's really fascinating to start looking into this and just learning how vibrant the island music scene has always been.
Yeah.
I'd say locally, as well as we were a major stop on the touring route for major bands back in the day.
Fantastic. I can't wait for this one. I'm going to come down. You say August Bank Holiday.
August Bank Holiday. We'll be holding an event to open it. You're invited, obviously.
Brilliant. Thank you.
And yeah, we'd like to see you there.
No, it'd be really good. I'd love to see that. I just think we are so blessed with people that are around now, but we always encourage other people to get in touch as well with this stuff from way back. It doesn't matter how old it is, so send it in. I mean,
and if people have got stuff and they'd like to donate it or sell it if they want to, but you know, if it's stuff that should be on display, I mean, we'd love to get more stuff about island nightclubs. I think you might be able to help there.
Yeah, I've closed a few.
But you know, places like Le Barbalou, the Carousel, the 69 Club, we've got some bits and pieces, but there'll be loads of other stuff out there, and it would just be wonderful to have that on display so people can celebrate that and the memories. One reason we started this back in the day, 2018, was to start holding celebration events for the original Isle of Wight festivals. And people might remember we did one back in Tapnall Farm in 2018, and that's where this started. But after that, we got involved with a dementia charity, because one thing that music is really important for is memories. And we still have that angle to things, and it is really great to see people coming in, looking at some of the stuff we've got and saying, do you know, I remember. and things start flooding out, and it's good for them, and it's really interesting for us as well.
Well, do you remember when you turned up one day and Ray Dorsett was here?
Oh, yes. And he didn't leave, did he?
We couldn't get him to leave. It was the Battle of the Hair. But the
Mungo Jerry, for people who might not know the name.
But he was saying that...
That's when I was a bit curlier on top.
The bill for the festival, and he got bumped.
Yeah, he never played. He was here to play Bestival.
Yeah.
2008, was it? Yeah.
It would have been... Because we didn't start till 2010, so it would have been about 10 years ago. Okay. We were out in his shed... We couldn't. I mean, it was a very small space, and to get two lots of curly hair in one room was quite difficult. And there is a lovely picture that's still doing the rounds, I'm sure.
I have got it somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
he was a lovely bloke, but he could talk.
Crikey.
He's worse than you.
I have to say, look, sorry, Ray, the show's finished now. You've got to go. You've got to get
about
out.
2 hours after that, he actually went out of the shed, wasn't he?
Any Mungo Jerry stuff you got? I mean, you know,
in the shop? Yeah. We've got a few copies of albums. There's you're interested in collectible ones. Oh, crumbs, I can't remember the name of the album, but there was one of them came with a pair of 3D specs, so you could look at the cover art in 3D.
Wow.
And again, if you've got that and you've got the original 3D specs, you've got a collectible item.
Now, you've got something there that I looked at and I thought, crikey, that's expensive, that one. Is it a Pink Floyd one?
You said to bring a couple of things in, and you know, some albums had particular packaging back in the day, particularly in the 70s. Some albums were very common, but if they still have their original bits and pieces, they're worth a lot more. So I've got a copy of Pink Floyd's Wish You Were Here, which most people will know as having a white cover with two men shaking hands on the front.
Right.
And that's in good condition, a nice album. It's got a reasonable price tag on it. But what you really want is, firstly, inside there's a postcard, which is of a sea without any ripples on it, and someone diving in, their legs sticking up. If you've got that, that adds value. But the real value with this one, as you'll notice, it's got black vinyl over the top of it. The album was originally shrink-wrapped, with a sticker on the front to tell you what it was. Most people, of course, just pulled the shrink wrap off, threw it away, maybe kept the sticker on the front.
Yeah.
But what we've got here is one where someone very carefully sliced down the side to get the record out, but left the shrink wrap on the record. And that has become a desirable item. So if you bought your copy of Wish You Were Here in 1975, and you very carefully slit the side of it, and I know some people will have bought one, kept it pristine, and bought another one to play. That's what collectors do. We've got a £96 price tag on that, because they are rare to find in that condition.
We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Ask me to tell you about the story about UVox.
I'll ask you about that in a moment.
Yeah, do that in a moment, can you? Can you remind me? It's 19 minutes to one. There we are, that's the Beatles, and your bird can sing. It's 13 minutes to one. We've got Jonathan in from AAA Records, and we are talking vinyl. We've had a chat about cassettes, local music, and so on. We were just
You wanted to ask something about UVox?
Oh, yeah, UVox. Yeah, now I remember back in the day, about 1986, when they weren't having quite so many hits as they used to, Ultravox. They changed their name sort of. I mean, it was only on their sleeves that they did it. They did this thing called UVox, and there were two tracks that they had. And I'm pretty sure they both had, one was blue, one was green. All Fall Down was one. It was the smaller hit of the two. I can't remember what the other track was called. Same Old Scene or something like that. It had an outer sleeve. It had like a plastic see-through sleeve, but it had some markings and some colourings on it that if you matched it up right with the single inside or the sleeve inside, it all looked lovely. It all looked like a proper picture.
Yeah, and I haven't seen... I think we've got a copy without the outer plastic sleeve. I'm just trying to look it up as you're talking. I think... And it was a 12-inch, was it? Or 7-inch?
No, it was a 7. They were both 7 inches. I would imagine they were available on 12-inch.
It's... Well, if it's... I've got the right thing here. It's somewhere between £12 and £30, depending on which pressing it is.
Right.
So yeah, it's a nice item, but sometimes these things are just nice to have. They're not particularly worth an awful lot, but
wow,
they're just a memory or an attractive thing.
I remember rushing down to Happy Days back in 1979-ish. To get a Squeeze single that was a Christmas single that was the worst ever Christmas single.
I remember that, yes.
But it was available on white vinyl.
Oh, you had to get your coloured vinyl.
Oh, it had, something about white vinyl, isn't there? Because it's complete opposite of what you normally would get.
I suppose so. I think I quite like the clear vinyl ones.
Oh, that was another nail in my heart. That was a clear vinyl.
Yes.
And
it's come back because the current Wet Leg album is on clear vinyl as well.
So we're going full circle here. I mean, you know, so you've got people now have the ability to go down the shop, have a good look around a record shop, a proper record shop. You're going to have so many memories. I mean, you go in there and spend hours just looking and thinking, crikey, I remember this, and I might have had this myself, and so on.
It's interesting, we get, obviously we get a lot of visitors on the island, but we get quite a few people coming in saying, there's nothing like this around here, around where we live. You get that story. Some people are in a sort of vinyl desert. I mean, we're not the only record shop on the island by a long chalk. There are others around, and it seems to be a particularly strong market here. But yeah, we could almost start vinyl tourism, I think. Yeah. Because we do get people who are specifically coming over to come around the vinyl shops.
Now, I just want to go back, because when we were younger buying records, everything would have been on a record. You know, in the 70s and part of the 80s, everything would have been a record or a cassette, maybe.
If you didn't have space for records.
Yeah. And, I mean, my mate Shane Chessel, who's 60 on Monday, I always used to think he was bright, but he was a bit of a wally, because what he would do, he would go out and buy... I hope so. I hope he's learnt his lesson since. And he would go out and buy he would go out and buy the cassette. So just say, for instance, Big Police fan, went out and bought the cassettes, the official Police ones. And I thought, you're an idiot. Go out and buy the record and record them. Then you got both.
But didn't the record have the inner sleeve, home taping is killing music? Don't you remember that? That was a big campaign.
I
can
read. I missed that bit. But going back to my point, 70s, 80s, everything was geared up for vinyl or cassettes. So how difficult is it for an artist now? You mentioned Wet Leg, you mentioned Peel as well. How many vinyls do they have to print off? How many, is it easy to get a hold of vinyl? Is it easy to...
Definitely a resurgence. I think... I'm no expert in this. I think there aren't that many plants producing vinyl. So certainly when a big artist is putting out something on vinyl, it clogs up the system. I think that happened with, was it Adele or Taylor Swift a wee while ago? People just end up in a queue because there aren't enough plants pressing the stuff. But, you know, there's a big market in new vinyl. Part of the shop we have is a new vinyl section. That is new releases. It's also people pressing up classic albums as well, because sometimes they're difficult to get, sometimes they're very valuable and they're out of the range of most people's pockets. So there's a big market in new vinyl, I say new artist and old. But as to how many are produced, I don't know. That'd be an interesting question to find out. But it's usually pretty available. A record, what was the one we had recently? Pulp. A lot of people came in wanting the new Pulp release on vinyl. I think we've still got one. But we had a lot of demand for that and a lot of copies in.
And at that time, there was a lot of them.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it was fairly easy to get.
So we were
hold
able
of
to get them, yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
That's incredible. Now, I'll tell you what, next time, we're running out of time, but next time you come in, what we've got to talk about is, or one of the topics we want to talk about is, the things that are actually written on vinyls. Things like, if you have a look closely, if you're a real anorak and you used to get your record and have a little look at it, things like Porky Prime Cut.
yeah,
and things like that. They were written, they were like inscribed into the little bit where I ain't got any grooves.
And it's usually the guy at the mastering plant who was just putting his little signature on there. But sometimes, yes, there are messages.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, that's what was his name? But Porky was a particular individual, and yeah, that was just his signature on records. A lot in the 70s had that. But there are other different ones. There's the first version of Queen's Night at the Opera. If you've got an early copy of that, look at the label. If it's got Blair's inscribed in, it looks like someone's done it with a compass point. So Blairs. That is the valuable first cut of it, the Blair's cut, it's called.
Oh, right.
But there are other strange messages. There's a Led Zeppelin album which has got satanic messages inscribed in the early copies in the run-out. You can be very anoraki about this, but there are interesting things. Sometimes the run-out groove, people put things in it. You know, Beatles famously recorded just whistles and dog noises at the end of Sgt. Pepper. Yeah. There's a great King Crimson album, live album. You think it's going to fade out, and it doesn't. They've put audience applause in the run-out groove, so if you just leave it on, keep it turning, you just get constant applause playing until you take the needle out.
Wow. I mean, there's so many things that just popped in my head about the ELO that gets...
It's all stuff you can't get on Spotify.
and you wouldn't have had it on CD either, would you?
I mean, indeed.
Please Turn Me Over, that was one of their tracks, obviously. Was that... Mr. Blue Sky, wasn't it LP track? No, was it that one? Got to the end of the track. Got the end of the side one or side three or whatever it was, because it was a triple. It was a double album, wasn't it? And it would say, "Please turn me over." And
you'd have to turn over.
And one that pops into my head now is B.A. Robertson. You mentioned him earlier. Initial Success. There was Here I Sit, and all the band have left, and so on. So it's me to play to the end of the side, and by the I can see that there are 20 grooves missing, and then all of a sudden it stops because you've got to the end of the record. Oh, it's just loads of things like that. That honestly, they're fascinating. I could talk to you all day.
I noticed that. Yeah.
We got to go though, because
I think there's someone else coming in, isn't there?
Oh yeah, they won't mind if we're half an hour late. I'm sure we come back in a month's time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Love to.
Yeah,
because it's really fun.
Lots of things. So let's do the Porcupine cut and the things that they're talking. And obviously, in the meantime, if you've got a load of albums that you don't want, don't chuck them out. There's a place, you know, in town.
Someone will want them.
Yeah. Triple A Records. And obviously, if you want the new stuff as well, it's all in there.
Yeah. Please visit us. We're very friendly, and we've got loads of stuff, whether it's cassettes, vinyl, CD. We have a big CD section as well. Some people don't realise that. And we'd love to see you at the shop and say hello.
Can I come with you in a minute? You're going over to the shop, take them records back?
I'm off there in a minute, yeah.
Come on in. Can I hold your hand?